You're listening to a 3CR podcast created in the studios of independent community radio station 3CR in Melbourne, Australia. For more information, go to allthews.3cr.org.au. You're listening to a 3CR podcast created in the studios of independent community radio station 3CR in Melbourne, Australia. For more information, go to allthews.3cr.org.au.
Green Left Weekly Radio.
There's one newspaper that is independent of powerful capitalist interests, and that is Green Left Weekly.
It's the people's voice, committed to human and civil rights, ecological sustainability, democracy and equality. It presents ideas that the mainstream media won't.
Green Left is a leading source of local, national and international news with analysis, discussion and debate to strengthen the anti-capitalist movement.
It helps expose the lies of the capitalist press and puts the voices of the marginalised and the oppressed at the centre of fighting for a better world, and helps us understand the political developments unfolding around us.
Good morning, listeners. You have tuned in to Green Left Radio. We are coming to you live from the 3CR studios, streaming live from 3cr.org.au and coming through on your dial 855 AM. It's Friday, April the 10th, 7 AM. I'm Chloe and I'm happy to be co-presenting with my friend Steph. Good morning, Steph.
Morning, listeners. So we would just like to quickly acknowledge, well, not too quickly, we'd like to acknowledge that we're meeting on stolen land. So 3CR and Green Left recognise that this show is being broadcasted from the land of the Wurundjeri Woiwurrung people, the original rightful sovereign owners, storytellers and caretakers of this land. Australia was founded on genocide and dispossession of the First Peoples, and we recognise that this genocide is ongoing. As socialists, we pledge to actively support decolonisation. We stand with all the First Peoples of the world in their struggle for justice and rights to their land.
Yeah, if it's your first time tuning in, welcome or welcome back. Green Left is for eco-socialist action. We are living in an unequal world and we are in a climate emergency. There are wars, genocide and growing inequality, and we all have to pick a side. Our side is and always will be that of the 99%. And Green Left exposed the lies, hypocrisy and the bias of the billionaire class and their media. And we are activist journalists here, including Steph and I. we're trying to help organise efforts of all those actively resisting the increasingly authoritarian rule of the corporate rich here and overseas. So head to greenleft.org.au. Or check us out on any social media platform and support us.
Yeah. So we've got you go, Chloe.
That's okay. I was just gonna give a rundown of the show. Yeah. So on the show today we have organized three interviews. The first one is going to be at 7:20. We'll be speaking to Sarah Williams, the CEO from What Were You Wearing Australia. That is a charity fighting to end sexual violence for survivors by survivors. We'll be talking to Sarah about the upcoming National Day of Action being planned on the 18th and 19th of April. At 7:40 a.m., we will be interviewing Iranian-Australian writer, leftist and political activist Ali Keshtekar, who has lived in exile for over three decades, currently based here in Nam. Ali is a former political prisoner and survivor of a death sentence in Iran, and he brings both lived experience and critical insight to the war on Iran through his work. At 8:10, we will be speaking with Moyad Ali, Palestinian organiser with Free Palestine Melbourne and a regular guest here on 3CR. We will be speaking to Moyad about the Free Marwan Barghouti campaign, Israel's new death penalty laws and Palestinian Prisoners Day that is coming up. But first, we're going to head to some news headlines.
Yeah, sounds good. And listeners, I have to apologise. I'm still like recovering from a bit of a cold, so I apologise if I start spluttering on air. At least it's on air and not in person, so sorry about that. So it should be a great show today. It's going to be some pretty good interviews, I think. So just to mention just a few of the I feel like the news is just a bit overwhelming at the moment, isn't it, Chloe? There's just so many things happening and just so much violence and so much horrendous abuses of human rights. So but maybe we'll start off with a good news story and that's just around the recent win around unfair junior rates being abolished. And so this has been a big union campaign for many, many years. But basically until this change comes in effect, it is legal to pay young people aged between 18 and 20, so under 21, less than people aged over 21 in three main industries, so the pharmacy industry, retail and fast food. And so this is a long overdue landmark decision, but it means that hundreds of thousands of workers across the country will get a significant pay rise, and future workers aged 18 plus in these industries won't be facing the unfair reality of earning a fraction of what their older workmates are earning. My only disappointment with this, I mean, there may be others, but this is one that kind of just stands out, is just it only applies to workers who have more than 6 months experience with their current employer. It's still discriminatory based on age.
Yeah.
With that, because there's no, yeah, that same rule is not applied to other people aged over 21. But it's still a big improvement, and especially given those industries are really low paid anyway.
Thanks for bringing that news story to us. These whittled down youth wages are really based on lies and assumptions that jobs are somehow done better by adults. And what does that mean, that young people should be paid less? But in a capitalist society where young people are consistently discriminated against and exploited, there is this strange acceptance that we have that youth wages are something that we just have to live with. But youth wages are part of the exploitation of young people, especially in industries like hospitality and retail. Yeah. Businesses love to keep youth wages going to keep their healthy profit margins.
Mm.
And many, you know, I think there's this, kind of assumption that high school students are just working for other reasons. Many have to work because they have to support their families or fund their study, because we don't have free education in this country. So we need to dispel this idea that a young worker's work is less valuable. And the ruling parties like to say that junior employees need to stay competitive in the labour market, and their minimum wages must reflect that they have lower skills and experiences than adults and therefore less value to employers. But really, most young people pursue work in jobs which that have, you know, hopefully sufficient training, and it can actually be done by anyone. And there's no evidence to suggest that age plays a role in their ability to do their jobs.
And productivity, it's absolute rot. Like with this particular ruling, like it's for by the Fair Work Commission, it's for young people over 18 but under 21. But they're legally adults in every other sense. Like, and it's just, it is really age discriminatory. And also these are really low paid sectors to begin with. And yeah, like a lot of, I mean, you know, I'm a social worker. I've worked with so many young people who've had to be supporting themselves for a whole range of reasons. It is deeply unfair. So I'm still disappointed that there's that rule around it only applies to young people who've been with their current employer for 6 months. Like
We need to keep fighting to stop
exactly
exploitation of young people and stop justifying unfair discrimination in the workforce and stand up for young people's rights. And we also need unions to be able to fight against those attacks on their rights and conditions.
Yeah, totally. But we might just mention a couple of other things that have been happening this week. Of course, the awful blockade by the US against Cuba that's seeing an absolute energy crisis and oil crisis. Well, the people of Cuba have been taking action, which is like wonderful to see them fighting back. But yeah, hundreds of women marched in Cuba's capital, Havana, just earlier in the week to protest the de facto oil blockade that's occurred. And yeah, and just a really strong amount of resistance there. So yeah, of course, we're thinking of Cuba and the awful impact that the oil blockade's having on them after, you know, years and years of like unlawful sanctions that the US has imposed on Cuba. Yeah, and just some other things that we might just quickly mention, like, because with the interviews we've got planned, we'll cover some of those things in a bit more detail, but just of course the awful war in the it's hard to even say, like, it's not one country anymore, I guess, like, but yeah, particularly by Israel and the US against Lebanon, Iran and Palestine in particular, yeah, continues. Something that's been happening sort of kind of it's not receiving the level of attention that it should be receiving is my feelings around it. Just that there's a severe water shortage in Gaza at the moment, and residents in Gaza, so the Palestinians, are describing daily torment as water shortages worsen, leaving families just desperate for clean drinking water. So it just shows you just how the genocide is continuing. Like, it's, you know, when they're not bombing and shooting Palestinians, they're starving them or denying them of water. And that's such a basic need that people have. And it's, yeah, it is absolutely genocide. And I guess this whole genocidal goal that both the US and Israel has is also on display with some of the comments Trump has been making around, yeah, wiping out Iranian civilization. Like, he's literally said that.
Albanese didn't really, even though he tried to mildly criticize, it was actually quite pathetic, the response to that comment. But also, just Al Jazeera reporting, if people haven't heard, that Israeli forces have carried out a devastating bombardment across Lebanon, killing hundreds of people hours after a 2-week ceasefire was announced in a United States Israeli war on Iran. Lebanon's civil defense said at least 254 people were killed and 1,165 others were wounded in airstrikes that targeted areas in Beirut, the Baca Valley, Mount Lebanon, Sidon, and several villages in South Lebanon. There is a protest to stop the war in Lebanon and this Saturday in Naam, 12 p.m. outside the state library.
Yeah, sounds really important to get along to that. So, yeah, unfortunately there's just absolutely heinous violence that's being inflicted on Iranians and Lebanese and Palestinians. The other thing that's been happening as well in Iran is, Israel and US have been purposefully targeting fuel stations and infrastructure. Something that's been quite beautiful but also heartbreaking to watch in the media is just how the Iranian people have been forming like effectively human chains around their infrastructure to try and protect what they have, which is just it's really hard to even fathom what just the level of destruction and violence that they're facing. But yeah, we just really want to extend our solidarity and yeah, just also, yeah, I suppose, yeah, for the world that's watching and just horrified, and for people who have family and who have come from those countries, you know, we're really feeling for you at the moment, and it's just, yeah, this is completely unacceptable, and it makes it really important for us to be at that rally tomorrow.
Mm. And Labor's, just to have another go at, Labor's Anthony Albanese stops short of condemning Donald Trump for his actions, and we'll give these mild criticisms of Trump's language threatening to wipe out Iranian civilization, but just describing the language as inappropriate for a United States president is not enough. The Australian government was one of the first to support the US and Israel's attacks on Iran. No one supports this war, and instead of just attacking the way the US president speaks, they actually need to, you know, the Labor government must cease its involvement in the war in Iran, on Iran, and recall ADF personnel and the equipment from the Middle East, and close US access to Pine Gap and the Northwest Submarine Communication Station, and actually push for a return to, you know, for peace. So yeah, these are the things that we need to be demanding that our government does break, cancel AUKUS as well.
Yeah.
Any other headlines before we go to a song?
There's so much going on. I'm just having a look here. I mean, we'll cover this in a bit more detail later on, just around the death penalty. That's just appalling. We'll go into that in a bit more detail later on, I think, with the interview that we have lined up. So maybe we can go to a song at the moment.
We'll go to a song. This one is another presenter on the show. You know, listeners may have heard him. Zane requested this one, an oldie but a goodie, he says, and it's a good track about working class people commuting to and from work. It's by The Herd, and we have spoken to the musicians from The Herd on this show. So they are one of our favourite bands, and this is their track, States of Transit.
Last night, early morning on the bike, 8 hours in the shop most days of the week, maintaining food on your plate and your place in the street. Keep 1 hour on the clock and say you're ready to bail. Learnt long ago never to rely on city rail when you ride the Sydney system. You're up there with the best, cold laughing out loud at that ridiculousness. Past the park with the Tai Chi stretch and yoga heads, and the people with the bottles and the benches for beds. Hell for leather down crown, hold your breath at the light. Keep monoxide from your lungs and keep it fresh for the mic. Band practice tonight to try and keep the set tight. But before then, spend time with the love of your life. Got priorities right, maintaining love with respect. There's 1,000 roads to travel, but you know your direction. Same line, same day, all on the same track. We cross paths but barely interact. You've got no time to chit-chat, you've got a schedule to keep. Shooting straight across the city and you're dodging the sheep. It's the same line, same day, all on the same track. We cross paths but barely interact. One more 24-hour stretch from daylight to dusk and dusk down to desk. Waiting for the 428. Ragged old suit briefcase looks much older than his age. Like to catch a bus home, not concerned by the traffic and the lights and the ticket price highs. Kinda like the bus, no one talks that much. Keep the conversation hush, the city's pretty at dusk and most faces are expressionless. Pressing the bell while peak hour breathes perfume that you just can't sell. From Central up to King Street, window washers hustle all the cars. The bus driver just looks and laughs. I pass pools and parks and pass people by. He's content, never meeting with no reason why. Whoever cold yet comfortable, welcome at home. A little bachelor pad, a goldfish and a phone. Where he'll go back to sleep, dream and wake up at 8. Get prepared, catch the bus back to work again. It's like same line, same day, all on the same track. We cross paths but barely interact.
one more 24 hour stretch from daylight to dusk and dusk down to desk. Same line, same day, all on the same track. We cross paths but barely interact. It's all I ask of this complex town. Share a tale or two and watch the sun go down. The sun set so fast I didn't see it happen. Like I look back on days just to see the patterns. See the way the last rays of the day are scattered in such a different way to when I first sat here. Another beer. You know, the more some things change, the more some things are bound to stay the same. It's a shame about those units across the street though. We used to get that much more light in the Arvo. Still, it's a good place to sit for a while. Even if these days I don't quite fit the style. It's the people I come here for though, not the decor. And they don't seem to think of me as too much of an old bore. I used to live just round the corner, but then the rent got too dear, so I moved from here. Still, it's not so far just to come for a beer. I'm not a local, but I'm still a local. Same line, same day, all on the same track. We cross paths but barely interact.
You've got no time to chit-chat, you've got a schedule to keep. Shooting straight across the city and you're dodging the sheep.
Same line, same day, all on the same track. We cross paths but barely interact. It's all I ask of this complex town. Share a tale or two and watch the sun go down.
You're back listening to Green Left Radio, and you were just listening to States of Transit by The Herd.
That was a fun song, actually. I really enjoyed that one. Yeah. Awesome. Good to have you back, listeners, with us. So we're going to go to an interview now with Sarah Williams, who is the CEO from What Were You Wearing Australia. Good morning, Sarah.
Good morning. Thanks for having me.
Oh, thank you so much for joining us this morning, and I appreciate it's like nice and early. and Sarah, I know we didn't have this in the questions that we kind of planned, but well, we've got you on the show to talk about well, a few different things, but also the upcoming National Day of Action that's being planned around ending gender-based violence. That's happening next weekend, but. Did you want to share with our listeners just anything, any fun facts about yourself?
Oh gosh.
I've put you on the spot.
A little fun fact would be, although I do, I guess, a lot of advocacy work as like my full-time job, I actually coach girls soccer on the side.
Oh, that's fantastic. There you go.
I sort of do that as my like little escape from this.
Yeah.
Work, hard work.
Yeah, absolutely, and that's gorgeous as well. I love that you're coaching a girls' soccer team. So there you go. It's always good to hear what people do in their spare time as well. And of course, we are having a serious interview today, but it's good to know just about what you do to look after yourself. Just a question here around, according to the Australian Institute of Health and Welfare, rates of domestic family violence and sexual violence have reached crisis levels, rising by 8% in the last year, 2025 to 2026. Would you be able to comment, Sarah, on the issue of violence against women?
Yeah. So I guess those statistics are very concerning. We know that even just in 2024... Prime Minister Anthony Albanese declared gender-based violence as a national emergency in Australia. Mm. So then to have 2025-2026 have this come out is showing that, you know, there is the chance that it means that more people are just reporting. But regardless, it's still a major issue in Australia, domestic, family and sexual violence. And what our government is doing obviously isn't enough, and we need to be doing more. I think it just really shows the scale of how urgent it is, how big of a problem we have, unfortunately, and how much more needs to be done.
Yeah, absolutely. And in fact, the death toll from of femicides has increased over the last year as well. So, Yeah. Are you able to just tell us a little bit about what were you wearing and some of the work that it does?
Yeah, of course. So we're a national charity fighting to end domestic family sexual violence. We mainly do support groups for victim survivors right across the country, actually. They're free, run by mental health professionals, and they allow victim survivors to connect with others, but also get that power, not only group connection, but learn different healing techniques. Aside from that, we do a lot of focus on, I guess, awareness and systematic change. So a lot of people, I guess, know us for challenging different victim-blaming narratives, particularly, you know, our name being what we wear. You know, that's all around making it clear that it doesn't matter what someone was wearing. It'll never, ever be victim's fault for what they were wearing in regards to sexual assault. But beyond that, we work directly with victim survivors by amplifying their voices and pushing different policy changes. So we'll sometimes campaign for different things. We mandated drink fighting training within New South Wales, RSA in 2023. We really just use the platform we have and our audience to be able to really put pressure on government and people in positions of power to make change.
Yeah, oh, such important work, Sarah. And and especially, that awesome work around running support groups. It can be just so invaluable for people who, you know, survive trauma, and just a really wonderful way for people to heal and connect with other people who've had similar experiences. So, yeah, thank you for all the work you do. I know you probably don't hear this enough, but, like, it's so, so needed, unfortunately, but also so appreciated what you do. So, and are you able to tell us about the upcoming nationwide rallies that are coming up?
Yeah, so we're organising nationwide rallies on April 18th and 19th, so not this weekend, next weekend, to demand urgent action on violence. So there's 17 locations across the country, and they're really about bringing an end to violence. So domestic family sexual violence, femicide, all the different types of violence, really, bringing their calls to end, predominantly, obviously, men's violence in Australia. We know, unfortunately, that majority of perpetrators are male. We obviously are still rallying for all genders, male victim survivors as well. So it's a really big way for everyone, no matter who you are, to come together to say no more. We did this in 2024. We did this last year as well, and we're doing it again this year. And, every year we've been able to see some really big changes, commitments by government as well. So we're hoping that we'll see the same again this year.
Yeah, that's wonderful. And it can be so empowering as well for survivors to be involved in taking that, like, really systemic action as well. I really appreciate that you've been organising these rallies. It's such an important thing to come together on and say enough is enough. We were just wondering, Sarah, if you had any comments on how the federal government is responding to family violence.
I would say there's been some positive commitments from the federal government. But overall, response, like, it still falls short of what's needed. We'll see time and time again, you know, some announcements of funding packages, but often they're reactive and not sustained at what's actually required. And then there's also a gap between policy announcements and what's actually reaching frontline services and communities. So, for example, you know, even just our charity in general, we don't receive any government funding at all. We don't see any of that funding. But we still are on the front line helping victim survivors. And we know that frontline services, even the ones that do get government funding, are absolutely begging all across the country for more sustained long-term funding. So not enough is being done, and we know this because statistics continue to increase. The issue is still just as bad as ever, unfortunately.
Yeah, it is. And I mean, particularly around family violence, for example, it's actually, it is getting worse, especially with rising cost of living and all of those barriers that prevent, again, mainly women from leaving abusive relationships. And it's just, and it increases the risk of family violence as well, like financial stress, it can be a factor too. There's a lot. And totally hear you. It's inadequate, and we need sustained effort, and we need it to be taken for the serious crisis that it is. Did you have any more comments, or would you like to tell us about the demands that What Were You Wearing are asking for with the rally?
Yeah,
rallies.
Sure. Yeah. So our demands, I guess, are centred around safety, prevention, and accountability. Obviously, our number one is sustained funding for the frontline, including men's behaviour change programs. But another one we've introduced this time is we really want to see mandatory domestic family and sexual violence prevention education for school-aged kids. We've got obviously healthy relationships in consent education, yep. But our belief is that we're not actually teaching kids what is domestic family and sexual violence. We're not actually naming it. Mm. We're not teaching them about coercive control, control and power in general, all the different things. And the biggest thing we know is children and just, young adults, teenagers, we can't report violence if we can't even name it.
100%.
Myself included, I was a victim of domestic family violence growing up, but I didn't even realise that I was actually going through these crimes until I was older and went to counselling for the first time.
Yeah.
And it really shows that if they can actually name it when it's happening, we can actually get them help earlier on. There's studies out there that show that it prevents the crime from happening. And so that's something we are really passionate about. We're going to start a petition very soon in Victoria for people to sign with that one. And then our last demand is on trauma-informed training for all first responders. So we believe that police particularly, but also, paramedics, anyone on the front line needs to be trained in trauma-informed care. So, what actually is domestic family sexual violence as well, but also how does trauma affect the victim and how can that look? And, people like police who are on the front line and seeing victim survivors in their most vulnerable time and state need to make sure that they're not going to potentially re-traumatise or put the victim through more by certain ways they ask questions or by their own beliefs. So that training is absolutely essential. So we've been pushing for that one for a few years now, and we're going to be pushing for that one again.
Absolutely. Oh, goodness. Yeah. Yes, 100% hear you on that, Sarah. And there needs to be greater accountability with police. We cannot have police investigating police around family violence and around poor responses to family violence and sexual assault. There's so much more that can be said around that. But, I think it's really important that our listeners get along to those rallies so that they can hear in more detail about the issues that survivors are facing and about the, like we're saying, the primary prevention work that needs to happen. It needs to happen early with young people when they're in schools, because that's when they're most malleable, and that's where we can really start to hopefully, prevent future violence from happening. Did you have any final comments for us, Sarah?
I don't think so. Thanks so much for giving us a voice, and I just think it's really important. No matter, you don't have to be a victim survivor or anything to come to the rallies. The more people who come, the more pressure it puts on the government to actually make change. So it's always really important that people find the one closest to them, even if you only come for, the start or the end. Showing up is actually very, very important.
100%. And even for someone who hasn't personally experienced it, they'll know so many people around them who have experienced sexual or family violence, like one in three women and have experienced gender-based violence. And like it's such a critical issue. So we need it's a community issue, and we need community to come together over this. Thank you so much, Sarah. I'll just plug the details for the rally in NAM, if that's okay. But we've got No More Rally Against Violence, Stop Violence Against Women, 11 a.m. at the State Library, and that's next Saturday, April the 18th here. But can people check the What Were You Wearing website for details of the other rallies?
Yeah. On our website or anywhere on our social media, you'll find all the information.
Awesome. Thank you so much for joining us, Sarah. And we just want to thank you for your time, and thanks for all the wonderful work that you're doing. It's so needed and so appreciated.
No, thank you so much for having us.
Okay.
Appreciate it.
All right. Have a great day.
You too. Bye.
Lovely.
The state Labor government has begun works on demolishing Melbourne's 44 public housing towers to be replaced with private housing. Already, hundreds of residents have been displaced, often into unsuitable homes under duress.
The towers on Racecourse Road, Flemington, have become Homes Victoria work sites, while the families still living in the buildings are being treated appallingly.
Join Save Public Housing supporters in solidarity with residents.
Weekdays 7:30 till 9 a.m. as we engage with passing traffic to make some noise and show Jacinta Allen
that the demolition of public housing is unacceptable. Signs and banners provided, or bring your own.
There's power in numbers, so see you at 120 Racecourse Road, Flemington, 7:30 till 9 a.m.
Save Public Housing is a 3CR supporter.
You're tuning in to Green Left Radio on 3CR, and you were just listening to an interview by Sarah Williams, CEO from What Were You Wearing Australia. We do have another interview coming up with Ali Keshtkar after the break, so stay tuned. I think let's play a bit of Barker, Our Lives Matter. We are Green Left Radio, being broadcasted via the Community Radio Network, thanks to 3CR.
Rest in peace, my uncle Mark Quayle. And to all my people who lost their lives at the hands of white police. Gonna shoot a brother in the back. Black mother at her doorstep. Impale a brother on a tall fence. Another brother shakes till he got no life left. Take the body bag to the mish. No respect, gunji bulls don't give a shit. The young fellas get chased into the river and their bodies turn up and they float them like ships. Burnt in the back till his body turned crisp. Blamed for the rape and she put liquor to her lips. He's bashed in the pack, he got broken in the bits. He's got his hands up, he's innocent, he didn't do it. Why my people gotta die? Ain't shit changed since we've been colonised. We want land rights, but there's no treaty inside. And we still gotta fight, cause coppers keep taking lives. I'm sick of it, sick of being traumatised. Scrolling down my timeline, see we lost another life. It's ridiculous, I wanna heal as a nation. But these ignorant dummies got me losing my patience. But we still fight, hold your feet son. My war cry, how many more of my people gotta fucking die? Yeah, they run the streets real steady, just ducking lights, red and blue, flashing by, tricks playing in my mind. I'm out here trying to live it right, wondering if I die tonight. It's heavy how we living, but we living our way. Ready for the day in Miami, we pray. I pray that a small gear don't stay safe, and I hope that our babies get to see better days. Questioning if anything's ever gonna change. Locked in the cell and the smell's real strange. Locked in my mind, but my brain ain't caged. I'll never assimilate, I'm a proud dog, babe. These whites and power need to get the picture. If you don't stand with blacks, no, I ain't rocking with ya. Black lives matter. Our lives matter. They got blood on their hands. Parker.
You're listening to Green Left Radio on 3CR, and you were just listening to Our Lives Matter by Barker. Barker is an Aboriginal rapper, proud Malyangapa and Barkinji sister, who really represents her people. She released that track called Our Lives Matter during the Black Lives Matter movement in 2020, and it became a bit of an anthem for anti-racism and a protest song against police brutality here in so-called Australia. And she copped a lot of criticism by the established media for, excuse me, for supporting the Black Lives Matter movement. And Green Left writer Matt Ward wrote in his column that those same media outlets failed to mention Australia's record-breaking rates of Indigenous incarceration, nor did they acknowledge the fact that Barker herself has served time, which she addressed in her songs. Please listen to her music. It's not just political. It sounds good too, and it's very powerful. She has a very powerful voice, and she delivers with a kind of fearlessness. All right, well, thanks for tuning in to Green Left Radio. We are really happy to have our next guest on the program. Ali, are you there? Can you hear us?
Yes.
Now I can hear you. So we have joining us Ali Keshka, who is an Iranian Australian writer and political activist based in Naam, Melbourne, who has lived in exile for over 3 decades, a former political prisoner and survivor of a death sentence in Iran. Ali is bringing both lived experience and critical insight to his work. And welcome to the show, Ali. Can you firstly talk about this temporary ceasefire and what it means for the Iranian people?
Okay. First of all, good morning to you and good morning to audience. And I think this ceasefire has actually 2 dimensions, and we need to understand both. First, it represents a historical victory for Iran and for what is often called the resistance front. At the very moment when Trump declared that Iranian civilization would be destroyed overnight, just hours later, he was forced to accept Iran's conditions for ceasefire. That reversal is not a minor tactical shift. It reflects a real political and strategical failure for imperialism and Zionism. But second, this victory does not mean the war is over. It simply means the war is changing its form. The conflict is now moving into other phases: diplomatic pressure, negotiation tactic, economic warfare. War continues as a prolonged crisis, and crisis itself become the trading of war. In that sense, the ceasefire is not an end, but a transition. And in this transition, Iran and its regional allies, particularly forces in Lebanon, are likely to hold a stronger position and may consolidate further gains. Yeah.
What are the main political forces behind the war on Iran?
Of course, obviously, is imperialism. This is not an isolated conflict. It must be understood as part of the long historical pattern of the imperialism wars. Wars aim to controlling the resources, dominating the strategic waterways, and maintaining global hegemony. The U.S. and Israel are not simply reacting to Iran. They are actively shaping the conflict as part of the broader geopolitical project. So if we misidentifying the nature of the war, we will misidentifying the political position. This is fundamentally an imperialist war, and it needs to be analyzed within the historical and structural framework.
Drawing from your recent article published... Oh, hello?
Yeah.
So, Ali, drawing from your recent article that's been published in Lynx, Two Tactics in the Anti-Iran War Movement, when we think about participating in the anti-war movement, how do we oppose this war that is being waged against an oppressive regime? Like, what are some of the serious challenges that we are facing, and how do we avoid being on the same side as the genocidal and imperialist powers such as the United States and Israel in their war against that regime?
I think clarity is absolutely essential. It is very important to notice this point, that our struggle against the Iranian regime is not the same as the war waged by the U.S. and Israel. For people inside of the Iran, the struggle against the regime is a social and class struggle, a struggle against exploitation, repression, and systematic inequality. But for the U.S. and Israel, this is not about democracy or freedom. The war is driven by imperial interests, control over the oil, strategic routes, and regional dominion. So our enemy, the people enemy, is not the same. In fact, the United States has historically played a major role in creating the condition of repression in Iran, even the regime itself. It's been created by the U.S. plan. So what our witnesses now is something even more serious. Imperialism is not just targeting the regime. It's targeting the entire society, schools, universities, infrastructure, the foundation of the social life. These are all under attack. So when the whole of the society is under threat and under the attack, the primary task is not obviously like political position. The primary task is defense of the society itself. That has to come first. That is my point.
If you're just tuning in to Green Left Radio, we are speaking with Iranian-Australian writer and political activist Ali Keshkar. Ali, in your article, you talk about the debate that has erupted among Iranian leftists about the presence of the Islamic Republic flags at anti-war demonstrations. Can you explain to our listeners what this debate is about and how we broaden participation in the anti-war movement?
Yes, among Iranian leftists, there are two main approaches. And one says that if the Islamic Republic flag is present, we shouldn't participate because that flag represents the repression regime. The other argues for a broad united front against war, regardless of differences. I support the second approach, because if the anti-war movement starts excluding people, drawing lines of entry and saying you are not welcome, it weaknesses itself. We have seen historically that successful anti-war movement grow through the unity, not exclusion. The Free Palestinian Solidarity Movement is a clear example. Its strength came from its ability to bring together very different forces around the shared objective. My position is simple. we shouldn't police the movement. We should build it. The slogan, "The people united, we never been defeated," is not just a rhetoric. It reflects a strategic truth proven in many struggles.
What do you think should be a priority for those who support the Iranian people's struggle for democracy at this moment?
I think the first priority is the survival of the society itself. This is the first important and ethical responsibility. Before democracy, before political reform, before any ideological struggles, there must be a society that still exists. If war destroys the social fabric, its institution, its infrastructure, its human connection, then even if political change happens later, there will be nothing left to rebuild upon. So the immediate task is to defend the existence of the society. Then is the next phase, especially in reconstruction, the struggle will continue and it will take a new form, particularly against the neoliberal restructuring and new forms of the economic domination that often follow the war. So the important matter is first defend the society and then continue the struggle for justice, equality, and freedom.
Ali, did you want to mention anything else to listeners before we wrap up this interview?
No, if you have any other further question, I would be happy to answer.
No, I think we probably need to have you back on the show at some stage to have a longer interview, because we've really enjoyed hearing from you, and we really want to thank you for your generosity of spirit and time this morning, Ali, and for sharing your insights with us in what is a very challenging and really dangerous and sad time of suffering for the Iranian people, and solidarity to you.
Thank you. I appreciate it. Thank you for having me.
Thanks, comrade.
Okay. Have a good day. Bye.
Work cover system is broken. Delays, denials, and profit-driven decisions are hurting real people, physically, mentally, and financially. Add your support to the call for change by the Injured Workers Support Team. Visit the Parliament of Victoria website, find the Legislative Reform for Workers' Compensation System e-petition, and add your name. Stand with the IWST and injured workers. Demand a system that is centred on recovery, dignity and safety. Sign the petition today. IWST is a 3CR supporter. The revolution in Rojava is a beacon of hope for the world, putting direct democracy and feminism into practice on a broad scale. This radical attempt at social transformation now faces huge challenges, including daily attacks by the Turkish military with little outside recognition or aid. Show your support for Rojava by joining Northeast Syria Solidarity, or NESS, and help ensure the survival of this inspiring experiment in social change. NESS sends aid, raises awareness, and builds solidarity. Get involved at www.nesssolidarity.org.au. NESS is a 3CR supporter.
You're back listening to Green Left Radio on 3CR. It's Friday, April the 10th. It's just hit 7:53 a.m. And let's go to a track by The Clash, Straight to Hell.
We'll be right back. about a British jig and reel. Speaking King's English in quotation. As railhead towns feel the steel mills rust. Water froze in the generation. Clear as winter ice. This is your paradise. There ain't no need for ya. There ain't no need for ya. Go straight to hell, boys. Go straight to hell, boys. Wanna join in a chorus of the Amerasian blues when it's Christmas out in Ho Chi Minh City. Kitty say Papa, 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 Papa Sam, take me home. See me got photo, photo, photograph of you and Mama, Mama, Mama Sam. Of you and Mama, Mama, Mama Sam. Let me tell you about your blood bamboo kid.
It ain't Coca-Cola, it's rice.
Straight to hell, boy. Go straight to hell, boy. Go straight to hell, boy. Go straight to hell, boy. Oh, Papa Sam, please take me home. Oh, Papa Sam, everybody, they wanna go home. So Mama Sam says, wanna play mind crazed banjo on the druggy drag ragtime USA in Parkland International. Hey, junkie dumb USA, where pro cane proves the purest rock man groove and rat poison. The volatile Molotov says, straight to hell. Can you cough it up loud and strong? The immigrants, they wanna sing all night long. It could be anywhere, most likely could be any frontier, any hemisphere. In no man's land. There ain't no asylum. King Solomon, he never lived round here. Straight to hell, boy. Go straight to hell, boy. Go straight to hell, boy. Go straight to hell, boy.
What's taking place in Palestine is horrendous.
Here are some ways that you can keep yourself informed and involved.
Listen in to Palestine Remembered every Saturday morning at 9:30 a.m. or listen to the podcast. Join the APAN mailing list at apan.org.au for updates, news about actions you can get involved in, and where you can donate to provide humanitarian assistance.
Listen to other news and current affairs programs on 3CR that also cover Palestine.
The oppression of the Palestinian people has been going on for 75 years. It has to stop. You can be part of making that happen by staying informed and active.
APAN is a proud supporter of 3CR.
Welcome back. You are listening to Green Left Radio on 3CR, and we just heard a song by The Clash, Straight to Hell, addressing... It's a song that addresses social issues such as unemployment, racism, and the impact of the Vietnam War. And The Clash were a rock band of leftists from England. They made a lot of music with anti-fascist themes, and their songs continue to be celebrated and rocked to throughout the ages. Let's go. We wanted to mention another news item before we go on to the activist calendar, that Australians are joining the biggest ever global Samud flotilla for Gaza. And I'm just reading from a Green Left article published recently that three Palestine solidarity activists who are joining the flotilla. It's an international mission to break the illegal blockade to bring aid to Gaza. Zach Schofield, an organizer with climate activist group Rising Tide, and also a previous guest on our show, said that the aid we will be carrying is in combination of food, medicine, skilled medical practitioners, legal observers, and construction workers. We believe that we have the best chance yet of any flotilla that has attempted to reach Gazan shores. The flotilla will be the biggest so far, with about 100 vessels and thousands of international participants. Schofield said it would depart from Italy around April 20th and take 2 weeks to reach Gaza. Kitchener Waters, Gomorrah and Niyam Part singer-songwriter, said he is joining the flotilla because the babies in Gaza are dying of hypothermia, dying of hunger, and who don't have their basic needs met because of Israel. He said First Nations culture believes all babies are sacred. We believe we have a responsibility to look after them. We played Kitchener Waters' song on our show last week, actually. Greens Senator David Shoebridge said I didn't have your mic on, Steph.
Oh, that's okay.
The Green Senator David Shoebridge said that 2.5 million Palestinians in Gaza are shivering in tents, grieving the deaths of their loved ones and the destruction of their community, many starving and in desperate need of medical aid. These three are putting themselves, he's speaking about the activists, that they're putting themselves on the line and face potential severe recriminations, violence, abuse, and imprisonment from the Israeli authorities to bring that message of hope. And he contrasted participants' courage with the Australian Labor government's cowardice, saying that surely the government can see that the world has changed. It's time we stop pretending the world is as Anthony Albanese and Penny Wong want it to be, and to realise that the United States and its partners in Israel are forces of chaos and violence in the world, and we need to chart a different path and our cooperation with the US military, close Pine Gap and other US bases, and end AUKUS. And yeah, I guess this is quite significant, this Samud that's taking off in 10 days, and we want to, you know, here at Green Left and 3CR, we want to extend all our solidarity to those three brave activists and all the other activists joining around the world on this important mission to Gaza. We hope they break the blockade to get that aid through, and then we hope they get home safely. The Australian government actually does have a responsibility to uphold its declaration to protect workers. I don't know how well they ever uphold that, but we need to be pushing Labor nonetheless to ensure the safe passage of that flotilla and ensure the participants are safe.
Yeah, hear, hear. Yeah. Well, maybe we'll cross to a bit of activist calendar now, Chloe.
Yeah, good idea.
Yeah. So tomorrow we have a snap rally on tomorrow. Israel out of Lebanon, 12 p.m. at the State Library. And then coming up during next week, there's a forum next Thursday, War or Public Housing. Ah, yes. Now, this is one that one of our members is very involved with, I believe. So that's on Thursday, April the 16th. War or Public Housing, Resist the Push to Defund Essential Services, and that's at 6:30pm at the Multicultural Hub in the Blue Room, 506 Elizabeth Street in the city, and that's all been organised by Save Public Housing. So yeah, that should be a pretty good forum, I think. And then Friday next week on the April 17th, we've got the film screening, Tomorrow's Freedom, 6:30pm, Cinema Nova, 380 Lygon Street in Carlton. And then, of course, Saturday next week, we've got the rally. We spoke to Sarah Williams from What Were You Wearing, who's one of the organisation who's organised these rallies. But, yeah, it's No More Rally Against Violence, Stop Violence Against Women. And the Melbourne one will be held at 11 a.m. next Saturday at the State Library, but there's rallies all around the country, so please attend your local rally for that. And then next Saturday we also have our Socialist Alliance State Conference, Building Resistance to Imperialism and the Far Right, and that's 1 till 5:30pm at the AMWU building, 251 Queensbury Street in Carlton. And then we've got the rally on Sunday and the US-Israel war on the Middle East. It's Palestine Prisoners Day. So that will be at 12 noon at the State Library. So it's important to get along to that one. We also have a forum coming up on Monday, the 20th of April, Why We Must Say No to Islamophobia and Welcome All Refugees, 6:30pm at the Kathleen Syme Library and Community Centre. That's 249 to 263 Faraday Street in Carlton. And then coming up, this is something for everyone to put in their diaries or Google calendars or whatever they use, but there'll be the Eco-Socialism Conference coming up in September from the 11th till the 13th to be held in Brisbane, and the theme for this year is Resistance, Decolonisation and Liberation. So, and that will be at the Albion Peace Centre, 102 McDonald Road in Windsor. So start booking that now, people. You can purchase tickets and, yeah, we highly recommend getting in early. This is going to be a great conference and, yeah, looking forward to seeing you all there.
And if you think we've missed something, please email us at events@greenleft.org.au. The Green Left Activist Calendar is published each second Wednesday by Melbourne supporters of Green Left as a service to the left and progressive movement. So if you want to subscribe to it, it's pretty awesome, and receive it in your email inbox. Whoops. That was a bit too early. Let us know if you want to receive that calendar email us at melbourne@greenleft.org.au or visit us at the Resistance Centre in Nam. Yep. All right, let's go to a quick break and come back with more Green Left Radio.
You're listening to 3CR, an apartheid-free zone. 3CR's Committee of Management has passed a declaration formalising our commitment to a free Palestine. As an apartheid-free zone, we're committed to boycotting Israel's regime of oppression. We stand firmly against apartheid in Palestine and encourage other organisations to join us in this struggle. Visit our website to read the full declaration and learn more about our commitment to justice and liberation for Palestine and the apartheid-free zone movement.
Public space, undertaking political activity. That is not something that people should be telling us that we can't do.
Multiple actions rolling over months and years and create huge sustained pressure of social change.
And what we're seeing around the country right now is increasing repression of protest.
Protest works. That's why I think we're seeing it criminalised all over the place.
3CR,
Stay tuned, stay radical.
Being a 3CR subscriber is vitally important to keeping us community controlled, grassroots and on air 24 hours a day, 7 days a week, 365 days a year.
Every 3CR show is a progressive voice that enriches and informs our communities.
From gardening and music to current affairs and First Nations voices, we broadcast expert community knowledge, offering perspectives beyond the mainstream media.
Subscribe today to be part of community-owned and community-controlled media.
Show your solidarity. Subscribe.
Go to 3cr.org.au or call 9419 8377.
You're back listening to Green Left Radio on 3CR, and we are happy to be joined by Muyad Ali. It's our third interview of the show. Muyad is a Palestinian organizer with Free Palestine Melbourne. Welcome to the show, Muyad.
Thank you.
Oh, welcome back, I should say. So, Muyad, we wanted to talk to you about the Bagauti campaign, Marwan Bagauti has been described as Palestine's Nelson Mandela, and this April will mark 24 years since he was unjustly imprisoned. Can you give us a bit of a background about Marwan, who he is, and the broader campaign to free him?
Yeah, sure. Marwan Bagauti is one of the most prominent Palestinian political leaders and symbol of resistance and unity to the Palestinian people. Marwan was a key figure during the first and second intifadas and is widely respected across the political section for advocating Palestinian self-determination and national unity. He was arrested by IOF in 2002 and sentenced in trial that Palestinians and many international observers consider illegal, illegitimate. And it took place under, of course, military occupation, the Israeli occupation. So for Palestinians, Marwan is not just a prisoner. He represents the struggle for freedom, dignity, and justice, and he also represents the hope of liberation and living in freedom. So that's why he is often compared to Nelson Mandela. Like Mandela, he is seen as a unifying leader who could play a crucial role in a future just peace. So the global campaign to free Marwan Bagauti is part of a broader movement to free all Palestinian political prisoners. Just to remember that he is one of the prisoners and he represents them all. So we have over 7,000 Palestinians currently held in Israeli prisons, many without charge or trial under what's called administrative detention. So the campaign calls for international pressure on Israel to release him as a step towards just and peace. Just and peace.
Yeah. Thanks so much, Muyad, for just explaining about about Marwan Bagauti, and that's just so awful to hear that he's been in prison for 24 years and just, yeah, the campaign that's still going on to free him. We're just hoping that you might be able to speak to, just the awful latest, I suppose, evolution of the genocide that's going on against the Palestinians, but with Israel introducing their new capital punishment, but only for Palestinians. And of course, I mean, there's been so much outcry about it, but and at the same time, not enough. And we're just hoping that you could speak to the death penalty that's been introduced.
There isn't move by Knesset to advance what is being called the death penalty for terrorists. Law is extremely alarming. This law is extremely alarming. In reality, Palestinians see this as law that targets them specifically, because they only Palestinian could actually face such punishment in a system that already applies laws inequally based on identity. For example, if I am a Palestinian and hit an Israeli by my car, easily that can consider a terrorist attack and I will be sentenced to death according to the new law. While if an Israeli did the same thing to a Palestinian, it will be considered just an accident. And I will go to a military trial at a military court, while the Israeli will go to the civil court. So this is what called apartheid, and also unequal laws for both. So this comes at a time when most of the world is moving toward abolishing the death penalty, recognizing it as a violation of international human rights. And instead, Israel is moving in the opposite direction, expanding its punitive system against Palestinians. Of course, Palestinian prisoners are already subjected to harsh conditions, including torture, medical neglect, and indefinite detention without a trial. So introducing the death penalty raises serious concern about state-sanctioned execution under an occupation system that lacks fairness and accountability. That's why we call Israel fascism system, because to see Ben Gvir celebrating in the Knesset by opening champagne, this is what actually fascism looks like. So the fact that several Jewish organizations have called on Anthony Albanese and Benny Wang to take action shows that this is not a fringe concern. It is a growing global human rights issue. Also, I believe Australia must condemn these laws clearly and constantly, because silence is, in the face of such policies, risks enabling further violation, upholding international law and human rights should not be selective, of course.
Absolutely. Yeah, thank you for saying that. And I was also reading recently that this is like the first, might be one of the first instances of a country or a state trying to introduce a capital punishment just for a particular population since the Nazi regime. Like, that is horrifying. And absolutely, we need to condemn it. It's state-sanctioned murder. But I'll let Chloe go to the next question.
So we had Palestinian Prisoners Day is coming up on the 17th of April. Tell us why this day is commemorated and how we take action.
Palestinian Prisoners Day is marked every year, as you mentioned, on April 17th. It is a day to honor and understand in solidarity with all Palestinian prisoners, those currently detained and those who have been
imprisoned over decades of occupation. For Palestinians, prisoners are not seen as criminals. They are hostages. And but as part of the national struggle for freedom, almost every Palestinian family has been affected by, in some way by imprisonment. So I know that every single Palestinian family has either a prisoner in the Israeli jail or someone has been imprisoned by Israel. This day is about raising awarenesses globally through protest, community events, and media, of course, like my interview with you at the moment, and calling for the release of prisoners and into, of course, the administrative detention and accountability for human rights abuse in the prisons, as we see and observe in the last few years. Since October 7, Ben-Gvir has put harsh condition on Palestinians, on Palestinian prisoners, like depriving them even from the minimum nutrition they require to have as a human. Cut all the visits, cut all the contacts with the lawyers, and that's absolutely not a human. So taking action can be as simple as educating others, contacting elected representatives, supporting advocacy campaign, and joining local rallies and demonstrations. So Free Palestine Melbourne actually this year have a few action centered about Marwan Barghouti as a sample, because also there is a Free Palestine Melbourne and Australia decided to join the international campaign to release Marwan Barghouti. So on the 15th of April, there will be a live webinar at 6:30, so organized by FPM. And also, and Arab Barghouti will have, the son of Marwan will be sending, he's already sent message and he will participate in the live webinar. So on also on the 17th of April, we will film screening called Tomorrow's Freedom, and that also organized by Free Palestine Melbourne. So those are the events that actually going to happen during that week, and on the 15th and 17th, and also we have the rally on the 19th of April, focused on Palestinian prisoners' day. Yeah, so those are what actually Free Palestine Melbourne are doing for the week.
Yeah, thanks so much, Moyard, and it's been just lovely having you on the show, and thank you for just sharing with us some of the awful things that are going on, but also what we can do to support the Palestinian people and defend human rights. Before we wrap up the interview, is there anything else that you would like to share with our listeners?
I would say the issue of Palestinian prisoners is not just a political issue; it's a human issue as well. Mm. So, because behind every number is a prison, behind the every number is a prison, a family, a story, a people. Like Marwan Barghouti have spent decades in the prison, yet continue to represent hope for justice and freedom. Listeners can play a role by staying informed, speaking out and holding governments accountable to the same human rights standards they claim to uphold. Because justice anywhere depends on justice everywhere, and and no people should be detained their freedom indefinitely. Thank you.
Thanks for taking the time to come back on the show, Ali, and for all the work you do in the Palestine movement.
Thank you.
And we were just speaking to Moyad Ali, Palestinian organizer with Free Palestine Melbourne, and some of the events that Moyad mentioned, Moyad Ali mentioned, can be found on the Free Palestine Melbourne Instagram page, and yeah, you can even look up Green Left as well for some of those events that he mentioned. But please make sure, if you can't make anything else, to at least try to make the Palestine Prisoners Day rally on Sunday, April 19th at the State Library. Yeah. We'll head to a quick break and then we will be back to wrap up our show.
Because the Palestinian fight isn't just the Palestinians' fight, it's all our fight, because it's a fight not just about land, it's about a fight for freedom.
Everybody should be standing here today saying, Free Palestine.
Solidarity with our Palestinian brothers and sisters on behalf of the Gumbanja Nation, my people who've never ceded their sovereignty.
We should be recognising Palestine as a state and recognising the rights of Palestinians.
3CR, stay tuned, stay radical.
We don't say it enough, Steph. Who are we? We are Green Left, people-powered, non-for-profit activist media.
Yeah.
We're mobilising people power against the power of big money. And we think that there is a hope, if we do that, of winning democratic, environmentally and a socially just future. And Green Left's aim is really to both help build movements of resistance as well as an anti-capitalist political alternative. And by giving that space for progressive ideas and debates and linking issues, activists and campaigns, we let people know how they can join with others to take action. And we are eco-socialists. That means we think an ecologically, socially just world is impossible under capitalism. And our goal is an eco-socialist world run by and for people. We receive no corporate funding. Green Left is a 100% people-powered project, and it just survives on the contributions and generosity of you, our supporters. So please think about supporting us if you like our work. If you're not already, you can make a one-off donation. You can choose from one of our monthly donation options. And to become a supporter and get the digital edition for $5 per month or the print edition for $10 per month, head to greenleft.org.au. And you can also call our number 1-800-634-206 to make a donation or to become a supporter.
Yeah,
and we want to thank, this is the end of our show, so we really want to thank our listeners for tuning in, and our guest, Sarah Williams, CEO of What Were You Wearing Australia, Ali Kashka, Iranian-Australian writer and political activist and political activist, Palestinian organizer with Free Palestine Melbourne, Moyad Ali, for coming on the show.
Yeah, it's been a great show. And if you have enjoyed our show, like I was saying, please consider subscribing to Green Left. But also, even one-off donations are so welcome. But also please read it as well. Definitely. Please read Green Left. Please listen to our podcast. This radio show gets uploaded as a podcast to our website. But there's also some really flashy, very nicely curated podcasts as well on by other members of the Green Left media team on our website. So go and check those out, because our radio show is definitely a bit rough and ready, but because it is live. But yeah, please support us. Also, please support 3CR. They play such a critical role in alternative media, and they're an amazing community radio station. Please support them in every way that you can. Also, throw them $5 a month as well, because that also supports the work that they do, and not just our show but all the other fantastic shows that are on here. So thank you everyone for tuning in this week, and until next week, you've been listening to Green Left Radio on 3CR 855 AM.
See you next week.
Bye.
You've been listening to a 3CR podcast produced in the studios of independent community radio station 3CR in Melbourne, Australia. For more information, go to allthews.3cr.org.au.